Are we starting? We're gonna do Megillat Esther. I first just have to start with an email I got from someone from a woman named Barbara Becker in West Hartford, Connecticut. She says, I've been listening to the Wednesday Shir that you give to women for at least 2 years. And she writes, it seems like I know you all. You know? So I thought you'd all get a kick out of that, which I, of course,
That's
did.
Cute.
Right. So welcome, Barbara. Hope all is well. And share the Shir. We're going to do last year at this time. Those who remember know what I spoke about right before it was. Do you remember what I spoke about at exactly this time when we did Megillat Esther? It was the day that Trump won the Republican nomination, and I predicted that he would win.
Yes.
Right back then and there, you can go back to the Shir a year ago, and I predicted he would win. True. So I thought it would be appropriate to talk about Ahasuerus. You know, not making any political comments at all, but I thought it would be appropriate because Ahasuerus is this really, really interesting and strange, strange figure.
Yeah.
Where in the world did he come from? We don't know. We know so little about him, we don't even know who he is. There's huge debates, especially among the scholars. Which king are we referring to? You know, there's little, how shall we say this, not little, no historical evidence of the story of Purim. Because it happens, it's like, it would be like an internal political argument, and then, okay, he sent out the letters, but there would never be any memory of the letters, and you would try to hide that later on. You know what I'm saying? You would just cover it up in some kind of civil war. You know how many times there were civil wars in ancient history? How many times were 50,000 people killed at one time in ancient history? Many, many, many times. So there's no external records. So who's this guy, Ahasuerus? Who is he? It's impossible to know. So even if we're not going to read that many psukim. We'll start with a couple of psukim, okay? It says, Vayihi b'mei Ahasuerus. It was in the days of Ahasuerus. Who Ahasuerus? Hamolech mehodu ve'adkush, sheva ve'esrim umeya medina. Right. It was in the days of Ahasuerus. Who Ahasuerus? This is the Ahasuerus. Hamolech mehodu ve'adkush. So what does that tell you about what we know about Ahasuerus? The Ahasuerus who ruled mehodu ve'adkush 127 countries. By the way, is that a lot? 127. Sounds like a lot. How many were there? How many were there altogether? So I saw a machloket. There's a machloket. Some say that there were 120, like it was the whole known world, the entire constellation of the world. Others say, no, there were 250 countries. Country, what does a country mean? You know, it just means a known area. So there were 250, and he had 127 of them. Why 127? Right, it's more than half. How much more than half?
It sounds like it.
How much more than half? Two more than half, right? Not a lot more than half. Hold on, I gotta find Ezra and Nehemiah. I will also. What's that?
It's like counting electoral votes.
Sounds like it, doesn't it? Okay, a little bit more than half.
But it doesn't matter.
Okay, I have this book also. This book is called Otsar Ishei HaTanach, okay, which is a treasury of the people in Tanakh. And basically, he goes through tons and tons of Midrashim and divides it by individual, by person. So, of course, I was looking up Ahasuerus. So, I'll share some fun ones.
An extra
Megillah? Yeah, there should be. Get a Tanakh. You can get a Tanakh. Just look at the Tanakh. But we're not going to be reading in the Tanakh. We're not going to actually be reading that much more. Well, maybe later on we will. Okay, but we'll see how far we get. Okay, so, one second. Let's just read a couple more psukim. Bayamim hahem, in those days, kishevet hamelech Ahasuerus al kisei malchuto, when King Ahasuerus sat on the king on the seat of his monarchy, asher b'shushan habira, that's in Shushan habira, bishnat shalosh lemalko asa mishteh lechol sarav v'abadav, chel paras umadai hapartemim mesarei medinot lefanav. In the third year to his rule, he made a party for all of his ministers and his servants, Chel Parasu Madai, the armies of Persia and Media, the Partamim.
Nobles.
Nobles?
That's what it says.
Okay. difficult to know. Okay, I'll read you a Midrash in Esther Rabbah. It says, Partamim were Shtei Ligyonot Shel Hamelech. It was like the king's special guard. i.e., we have no idea what Partamim are. Okay? And shtei medinot lefanam. Bring a chair. Let's go back. Interestingly, the Midrash goes bananas on this is like especially at the beginning. Okay? The word Vayihi. Do you have Rashi or you don't have Rashi? Okay, what is the word Vayihi? Do you anybody remember? We've learned Vayihi a number of times. What does the word Vayihi mean? The word Vayihi means Vayihi is Lashon Tsar. Okay, we've seen this in a number of places. Ein Vayihi ela Lashon Tsar. So it says the word is Vayihi. Vai. Vai means?
Oi.
Oi vai. I'm not kidding.
Really?
That's what it means. Vai. They say, of course, the Gemara. The Gemara in Megillah. Right, the problem is these Gemara are very, very long. So it's very difficult for me to find in the Gemara itself. I think it says exactly the same thing. I'm quoting from the Gemara. Here. Amar, I'm reading from the Gemara, Megillah, Yud Amud Bet. Amar, Rabbi Levi, V'itema, Rabbi Yonatan, Davar Zeh, Mesoret B'yadeinu Me'anshei Knesset HaGedolah. A little language. This is a matter of Mesorah. It was passed down from the men of the Great Assembly. Kol Makom Shedemar Vayihi. Anytime it says, you see the word Vayihi, Eino Ela Lashon Tzar. It's bad. Vayihi B'mei Achashverosh, Hava Haman. Right? As soon as Achashverosh shows up, hinei Haman. So the Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh is like, don't start getting excited. And in the language of the Midrash, I'll just read you, okay? Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh, Vay shamalach Achashverosh. Oy vey. Basically, oy vey is, it's a phrase all the way back from the time of the Gemara. I don't know what oy means. Oy lanu, yeah, it's also from the time of the Gemara. Vey, what is vey? Vayihi, that's right. Oy vey. I don't know. I always thought vey was Yiddish.
Is that just in
what?
Is that just in Megillat Esther, or is that
no? And then it says elsewhere. Vayihi b'mei. The Gemara is a ton. Vayihi b'mei shvot haShoftim. Right. It was at the times of the Shoftim. Is the book of Shoftim a good book or not so good? Right. Vayihi ara. Vayihi havara. Vayihi kir hechel Adam larov. And it was when humanity expanded, etc. Vayar ki Hashem rabah haaretz. The Gemara gives like ton of them, you know, like a ton of different examples of Vayihi. Vayihi is bad. Vayihi is never good. Okay? So, who is this person, Achashverosh? Let's ask another, excuse me, another question. Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh, who Achashverosh? What should it say, obviously? Vayihi b'mei Achashverosh, Hamolech mehodu ve'ad kush. So, that is so amazing. There's so many interesting midrashim. Okay, why does it say Achashverosh? Who Achashverosh? Again, Esther Rabbah, Perek Aleph. I gotta find myself an Esther Rabbah because I only have a companion. I have to get a Midrash Rabbah and read through it. Achashverosh, who Achashverosh? What does it sound like when I say just those words? Don't read the part. Read it this way. What?
It's redundant.
What?
James, he was James, or that we know him.
One second. Well, let me say it again. Forget the words Vayihi b'mei. Achashverosh. Who Achashverosh?
He's only defined by who he is.
Okay, so the Achashverosh is Achashverosh. So who is he?
Doesn't tell us anything. He's
okay. Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Nechemia. Okay, Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Nechemia. They both say that Achashverosh, who Achashverosh means, there were two Achashveroshes. Okay. Who was he?
He's with personality.
Right.
That's what I.
Exactly right. He was who he was on any given day. Okay. Why? Chad Amar Achashverosh harag ishto b'bnei ohavo. Right. In the beginning of the story, he killed his wife because he was embarrassed in front of his friends. But then hu Achashverosh harag ohavo b'bnei ishto. Later on in the story, what does he do? He kills his most trusted advisor because of his wife. So what kind of guy is he? Is he a family man or does he care about his advisors? What's the answer?
He cares
what's
good for himself.
What?
Just for himself. Yeah.
Whatever
is good for himself.
Oh, well, he didn't say no. It's not saying that. We're not. We'll get there, right?
He's strongly influenced by women.
He's influenced by women, not in the beginning of the story.
Sure, he's influenced by her, not necessarily for good.
He's influenced by anyone that's around him.
It threatens him.
I think what it means, what they're trying to say is, it's impossible. He's not. What's that?
You can't pin him down.
Can't pin him down, right? He's Achashverosh. Which Achashverosh? You know, Achashverosh. Right? Which one is it? Which Achashverosh did we get today? I don't know. Okay? Today he kills his wife because his you know, the guys, because of the guys. And tomorrow he kills the guys because of his wife. Depending on his mood and his attitude and what side of the bed he woke up on this morning. Okay, next one. Rabbi Nechemia Amar, Achashverosh shebitel melechet Beit HaMikdash. And this is a huge, huge theme in the whole Megillat Esther. This is Achashverosh who canceled the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. Who Achashverosh, the same Achashverosh, shegazar aleinu sheyibaneh. Right, later on, right? Later on, with his son, he rises up. Koresh is his son somehow, right? And we know that he's the same Achashverosh that because of him, the Beit HaMikdash is later built. So which one is he? Is he the person that stops the most important construction project for the Jewish people, you know, in the world? Or is he the same guy that builds the Beit HaMikdash? What's the answer?
Both.
Correct. What? And now, we'll get to that in a second. We'll get to this point in a second. So what's the point of this king? What do you do with such a king? Like, how do you deal with a king who can say one thing one day, the exact opposite the other day, can make a decision to destroy the Jews on one day, but then the next day can make a decision that the Jews are his best friends?
Sounds familiar.
I'm not making it. I saw the beginning. I'm making no political statement whatsoever, but you can infer from it what you choose. You can. You know, what does that mean? Who? That, meaning, what's? I think there's a deeper message, right? Hamelech Achashverosh. When you put your, how do you put your trust in a king who can say one thing one day and say another thing another day, and to him it's like all the same. Now, Derech Agav, for all people looking to make inferences, I personally believe this is true about pretty much every politician. You know, there are. Almost no red lines when it comes to politics. Never tell you the story. I went to, like, maybe year before I made Aliyah, I went to the APAC conference. Very, very powerful experience. But even sitting there, you just had the feeling that politicians, their job is not to, they don't push the direction of the wind. They feel the direction of the wind and they go in its wake. Right? And if a I wouldn't say all politicians, because some of them might have integrity, but their job is to represent their people. And if the people want X, then they represent the will of the people. And if the people want Y, then they represent the other interests of the people. You know, and you see it all the time, how politicians, they change their position on, you know, I've rethought my position. And we don't hold them responsible at all. We really don't. We don't care. Why? Because we're happy with what they say today. Or we're not happy with what they say today. You know, it's Achashverosh, I think, is a caricature or an extrapolation of, you know, the worst tendencies in politics. But if you want somebody to, you know, who are you, I think, and that's probably one of the deepest messages of the Megillah, who are you putting your trust in? Right? Hamelech Achashverosh, who Achashverosh? If you put your trust in him, you're going to get exactly what you expect. Okay? So who is this guy? Who is this Melech Achashverosh? So there's a huge machloket in the Gemara about who he is. One second. And where does that name come from? I'm just looking for. Do you have anybody here have the Targum? Nobody else has Targum? I didn't say bring my Targum. Okay. But I'll just read you the first line of the Targum. Vayihi bimei Achashverosh. What's in the days of the Achashverosh? Who Achashverosh? This is the Achashverosh. Dibiyomohe in his days, betelat avidat Beit Elanaha Rabba. He canceled the building of the Beit Hamikdash. Vahave betelat ad shnat tartin the Daryavish, and it was canceled until the 13th year of Daryavish. So we're not really so aware of this, but it's interesting that there was a movement to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Right? The Jewish people were exiled, Chorban Bayit Rishon, and might sound strange to you, but there was a small community in Israel, and then there were Jews all over the world. Okay, and the people in Israel were kafuf to the major power of the time, And they did whatever they were told to do. It might sound strange to you that Israel would do such a thing, but that's the way it is. I'm being sarcastic. That's the way it is today, Yosef. Okay? So, do people have a Tanakh? Anybody have a Tanakh? I also said, yeah. Did say to bring a Tanakh. If you brought a Tanakh, turn to Ezra, Perek Dalet. I will say I'm not an expert in Ezra, right? There's a lot of, how should we say this, unclarity, lack of clarity. Oh, you just have the Megillah, right? Lack of clarity about what years, or what happened when, etc., etc. Okay? But, I'm just going to read it in English. We'll read it in Hebrew for a little bit, and then it turns to Aramaic. Okay? Now, when the adversaries of Yehuda and Binyamin heard that the children of the exiles were building the temple to the Lord God of Israel, who were the adversaries of Yehuda and Binyamin? Internal adversaries, external adversaries, hard to know. Then they came to Zerubbabel, to the chiefs of the father's houses, and they said, let us build with you. Sounds like they're non-Jews. For we seek your God as you do, and we have sacrificed to him since the days of Esachar Adon, king of Ashur, who brought us up here. Okay, so we want to build the Beit HaMikdash together with you. You guys are building the Mikdash, we want to with you. Okay, but Zerubbabel and Yeshua and the rest of the chiefs of the father said to them, you have nothing to do with us in the building our house to God. We ourselves alone will build to the Lord God of Israel, as King Koresh of Paras has commanded us. I.e., we got permission from Koresh to build the Beit HaMikdash, stay out of it. This is a Jewish project. We don't want anybody else involved. So, of course, what did they do? They didn't like that, okay? Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Yehuda, frightened them off from building, and hired counselors against them to frustrate their purposes. I.e., they put sticks in the wheels. They said they made it so that they couldn't build. And then it says what they did was they sent a letter to the king of Paras saying the following. Be it known to the king that the Jews who came up from you to come to Jerusalem, they're building the rebellious and the bad city. And they have set up walls and adjoin the foundations. That if the city is built and the walls set up, then they will not pay toll, tribute, and custom. So the revenue of the king will suffer damage. Now, because we feel closely bound to the king's palace, and it was not meet for us to see the king's dishonor, therefore we have sent and certified the king, so you may search in the book of records of your fathers, so that the book of the records and provinces, that they have moved sedition within the same of old time, for which this city has laid waste. I.e., they sent a letter to the king of Paras and said, they're going to rebel. You're letting them build the Beit HaMikdash. What are you, nuts? They're going to rebel. So what did the king, of course, do? King sent the answer to Rahum and said, I command you, da-da-da-da-da, maybe decree that these men to cease, that the city not be rebuilt until a further decree is taken from me. Okay, who sent the letter? According to the Midrash, who sent the letter in order to prevent, what?
Ahasuerus.
No, Ahasuerus was the king. Who sent the letter?
Haman.
Haman was the person trying to, who was trying to build the Beit HaMikdash? Karen?
Jews.
No, who?
Mordechai.
Who tried to get the Jews not to build? Who sent the letter? Haman. All right. And once Haman sent his letter and they stopped the decree, so Haman decided, ooh, I'm in good graces. I'm going to move back to the capital. Who moved with him?
Mordechai.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble. We got to take care of this. Who accepted the letter?
Ahasuerus.
The names don't mesh, but Ahasuerus is the one that accepted the letter, stopped the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Why?
Because someone told him to.
Okay. And then later on, he decided to allow the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Why?
Somebody asked him.
Sure, build the Beit HaMikdash. Why not? It seems okay. Okay.
But it sounds like the Jews themselves were a bit responsible for the whole... I mean, maybe they should have allowed those non-Jews to participate in that.
I don't know. Hard question.
What would happen today if the Jews...
What would happen if you allowed non-Jews to participate in the building of the Beit HaMikdash?
But isn't the Beit HaMikdash supposed to serve everyone?
What's that?
Isn't the Beit HaMikdash supposed to serve everyone?
The Beit HaMikdash is supposed to be the temple of the Jews through which the nations of the world can worship God.
Okay, so what does that mean? That means that they can come to the Beit HaMikdash.
They can come and offer worship, but it's not theirs.
Right, but if they can participate in worship there, why can they not participate in the building?
Right, whoever builds it owns it, becomes part of yours. Right, it's supposed to be the Beit, But you have some. I understand what you're asking. I don't agree. I think that it's a dangerous precedent. It's a problematic precedent if you allow that to happen.
It would be so simple today.
What if the non-Jews wanted to build it?
Yeah, I don't know if they would agree.
I think the answer is, of course, money always talks, and whoever pays for it has a say in what happens to it later on. Mm-hmm. And that's a very dangerous precedent.
I think that's a key thing. It's different to say who's financing it versus who's building it.
You think they wanted to send guys? I don't think it mattered who the guys were. I think it matters
who's funding it.
Yeah, who's funding it?
No,
who's paying for it?
I just think like exclusivity is always dangerous. Like if you exclude people, then you take a risk that they're going to be a bit upset. So I don't know. I would say that they could have found a way.
Israel has a problem today. Why is Israel so kaput with the United States?
Money.
It's not just money, politics, you know what I'm saying? The more independent you are, the more you can say, I respect you and you're my friend, but I have to do what I have to do.
And we are a racist country, we accept only Jews. I mean, that is our...
Although nobody ever seems to mind that if you ever want to go to the Hajj in Mecca, right, that Muslims can go a certain direction and non-Muslims can only go so far. They're not allowed to visit, like, you know, Chadre Chadarim or whatever. But, right, what are you going to do? Okay. Is that door not closed? It's the bathroom door, I think. Okay. 127 countries. So where is this name Achashverosh from? So there's a huge machloket, because the name Achashverosh does not appear in the Navi. So all of a sudden, who is this person, Achashverosh? So the Gemara says it's a play on words. Oh, 1 second. The Gemara, I saw a midrash that calls him very interestingly, okay, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Hamid Aleihem Melech Chanaf. Anybody know what Chanifa is? Chanufa? Litcharef means?
Right.
There's an Isra of Lo Tachnifu, right, that it's called flattery.
Right.
What does it mean to flatter? It means to say nice things to people in order that they like you. And why? It's exactly this idea that we quoted. The Ezehu is this, Achashverosh. Why? Why is he called a chanaf, a flatterer? Same reason. Levisha harag el ishto mipnei ohavo. He killed his wife for his friends. Harag ohavo b'shvil ishto. Right? He's always looking to find favor in whoever is the person of the moment. Okay? Why is he called Achashverosh? First one. Amar Rav, this is from the Gemara, Achiv Shel Rosh Uben Gilo. He is the brother, quote unquote, of Rosh. Who is the head? Okay, who is that? Nebuchadnezzar. He is the brother of a Nebuchadnezzar HaRasha. Okay, why is he called the brother? Because he wanted to follow in the footsteps of Nebuchadnezzar. Shmuel said, Achash Ve Rosh. Shehushchiru penehem shel Yisrael, from the word shachor, because the faces of the Jews were blackened because of him. Does the word shachor fit into Achashverosh?
Backwards.
Play on words. Okay. So that's Rav and Shmuel. Okay. There's a bunch of others. Da, 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 da. Rabbanan said Achashverosh, shekol mi shezochro choshesh et rosho. Anyone who mentions his name is worried about his own head. Why? Because you never know what he's going to do. Okay? Because it says in one place, as soon as he's a king, Evel Gadol la Yehudim. When was Evel Gadol? When the letter of Haman came out. At the end of the Megillah, what does it say? Simcha v'sason la Yehudim, mishteh v'yom tov. Same king. Do you love him or you hate him? Does he love the Jews or hate the Jews?
Depends on how the wind flies.
Right. Now I got to get political. Is Trump an anti-Semite or does he love the Jewish people? It depends who you ask. It's so interesting. What?
Depends on the devil.
I actually personally really don't believe that he's an anti-Semite.
No,
I really don't believe that at all. Okay. Another thing it says very interestingly, Vayhi Hamelech Achashverosh, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Shemalach Me'atzmo. Where does he come from? He rose out of nowhere. I.e. Me'atzmo, on his own. He wasn't the grandson of, or the nephew of, or a member of, etc., etc. He rose up and became. Some say that he married Vashti, but where did he come from? Okay. Others say, Amrei le lishvach. Some say that's a good thing. Okay. That there was no one as worthy of him to be king. And some say, lignai. Some say he wasn't worthy of being king. You like this one. Umamona yetera hu diyahi vakam, and he gave a lot of money, and that brought about his rise. So some say he was, you know, he was the most appropriate. He was better than everybody else. And some say he paid his way in. Right? So it all depends on your perspective. It's crazy, isn't it? What? It's very interesting. Okay. So I know I'm a little bit over all over the place. We read the first three psukim. He was bayamim ha'hem kishevet ha'melech ha'chashverosh al kisei malchuto, when he sat on his throne. When was that? Bishnat shalosh lemalko, the third year of his reign. So we have to ask the obvious question: why did it take 3 years for him to sit on the seat of his reign?
He was partying before.
What's that?
Wasn't he partying?
But why did it take 3 years?
So maybe he was consolidating his kingdom, like conquering all the 127 countries.
Okay. Well, there's a few ways to read it. Bayamim ha'hem, kishevet ha'melech b'chashverosh al kisei ha'malchuto, when the king Achashverosh sat on his throne of his reign, asher b'shushan ha'bira, and then, b'shnat, et cetera, dot, 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 and then pasuk gimel, let's fast forward, Bishnat shalosh lemalko asa mishteh. And then 3 years later, he made a party. The problem with that is it doesn't sound right. What does it sound like? It sounds like, for some reason, he waited 3 years in order to ascend the throne. Why would he wait 3 years in order to ascend the throne? Anybody know? Anyone? Anyone?
He had to buy everybody off.
He had to buy everybody off? Well, what took 3 years? Okay,
so. Selecting his advisors.
Why? Oh, he's electing his advisors? Because it took 3 years for them to approve them by the Senate? Okay. So the Midrash says the following. The Midrash says it took him 3 years to sit on Kisei Malkuto. Why? Because he didn't want to sit on his own throne. Rather, there was a very specific throne he wanted to sit on. No? Anybody know? Anyone know what throne he wanted to sit on? Okay. B'sha'a shebikesh Achashverosh leshev al kisei Shlomo.
I was going to guess that.
Right? Achashverosh wanted to sit on the throne of Shlomo. What was the throne of Shlomo? So now I got to quote you. Okay. There's Midrashim, crazy stuff about the throne of Shlomo. Crazy stuff. What's that? Do you remember? Do you know? Anybody know? He couldn't. Okay, one second. Let me see. Midrash Rabbah. Okay. In the Midrash, the throne of Shlomo was not your normal throne. It was a supernatural throne. Okay, and it had
lions
and animals. Okay, it says there were shesh ma'alot lekisei. Right, there were six steps on this kisei. Okay. Allah lishev al ma'ala rishona. If you guys went on to the first step, hachuz yotzei va'omer, then a voice comes out and says, lo yarbe lo nashim. Like there are mitzvot that a king is supposed to keep. You can't have too many wives. Allah lishev al ma'ashniya. When he went to the second one, he says, lo yarbe lo susim. Right? Etc. etc. So every time he would go up, the king would be reminded of another mitzvah. By the way, you can make this throne today. That should be a project for your daughter. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
One second. She's a midja. No. What's that? Here we go. Allah lema'ala rishona. When he went up to the first step, ha'ari poshet lo yad. Then the lion would stick out its paw and extend itself to him. Ubashniya, in the second one, nesher poshet lo yad. Then an eagle would extend its, I guess, claw to him or whatever. I mean, he'd walk up and there'd be like animatronic animals. It was like, this was not just a chair. This was like a throne. I have no idea what we do with the Midrashim. Like, do I take them literally? Personally, not so much. You know what I'm saying? That Shlomo HaMelech was able to use some kind of crazy power in order to make his throne whatever. Okay? But who wanted to sit on this chair? Achashverosh wanted to sit on this chair. Very badly. Okay. I have actually, did I ever show you my Book of King David and Book of Solomon? No, I never showed that. Afterwards, I'll get it for you. When I was a child, very young, my father came home. He had these books. They were written by someone named Sue Freehoff, and it was very hard to. And he would read us these stories. I remember like Friday nights or Shabbat, he would read us one story a week, and she called them from all these crazy midrashim, right, of King David and King Shlomo. And that's how I know the midrashim. How is he going to know all these nutty midrashim that Chazal tell us? So I'll show you the book afterwards. I don't think they sell it now, but it's really you can find anything online. Anyway, so the midrash says the following. When Achashverosh wanted to sit al kisei Shlomo, Amra Knesset Yisrael. I don't know what that means, but Knesset Yisrael said, Ribono Shel Olam, Lord God. Let me just make sure this is still on and didn't shut itself off, which it probably did. Still recording. Okay, good. Ribono Shel Olam, God, Al Tenabel Kisei Kvodecha. Don't defile the chair of those who you are honored. So how did he get it? How did he get the chair? How did it get there? So it said after Shlomo died, Shishak, the king of Egypt, took it. Biktubat Bito, they sold it off. Okay, in a deal with Egypt. Sancheriv took it from Egypt. Okay, when he went to attack to Yerushalayim. Okay, Paro Necho took it from Yoshiyahu. Nebuchadnezzar took it from Egypt. Daryavish took it from Babel, and he took it to Persia. Okay, so it's sitting. Shala Achashverosh Beno. Okay, so when Achashverosh wanted to sit in it, he couldn't sit in it. So what did he do? Hevi chachamim lasot kemoto. He brought chachamim to do it. Okay, and they couldn't. So when Achashverosh wanted to sit on it and he couldn't, shalach vehevi umanim mitzur umil Alexandria, velo asu kemoto. He asked him. He said, "I want a chair like that one." Because whenever he went, I guess, to sit on the chair, the lion was like, "I'm going to kill you if you sit down here." Whatever. Okay? So he said, "Make me that chair." So they made him a copy. Right. So it didn't roar like the lion, but what are you going to do? Okay? V'asaki say, v'yashav alav. How long does it take to make a chair like that? Shalosh shanim askubo. Right. It took 3 years. Like, mashadeyamar, kishevet ha-melech ha-chashverosh al kisei malchuto. What kind of chair did he want? He wouldn't sit down and wouldn't make a party until. What kind of chair did he want? Come on, He wanted the best chair. That's what he wanted. He wanted, if he couldn't have that chair, he wanted exactly the same chair. And he's not going to sit on that chair until it's ready.
His
wife being, it's great, isn't it?
That she was the queen.
Yeah.
Because she was the daughter, and she was the queen, and it took him 3 years for him to manipulate the situation that he would become.
Probably, that's probably true. So, what do you do with my midrash about the chair?
Well, I mean, the chair is like
no. These things. These are stories. These are tales that Chazal have spun. From where? Right, but Shlomo, what did Shlomo represent?
Building the Beit
HaMikdash. Well, the Beit HaMikdash, correct. What also, Shlomo was the last known king that controlled the entire area. The kingdom of Solomon was known as a strong, united kingdom that projected its power across the whole world.
Correct?
What?
It's like comparing yourself to Reagan.
It's like.
Really?
Yeah,
or Kennedy.
Kennedy was not known as a strong president.
But royalty, thought of
royalty
to Reagan.
Right.
But also, isn't it that he thought of himself as a godly type of figure? Like we say that, like he made his kingdom like the Mishkan, like he saw himself as almost.
The inheritor of. Right. Oh, it's clear that the Chachamim saw it, that Chazal saw him as. He was counting the years, and that's the whole thing with the Kelim, the Beit HaMikdash. Right? Then that we've discussed in the past. Like he had the vessel of the Beit HaMikdash, and he brought them out, and he thought that the Korban was done. That's also clear as well. But just this idea of it, that he had to have the Kisei of Shlomo, the throne of Shlomo, and that's what took him 3 years in order to construct it, to build the thing. That's very powerful to me. Okay?
He says that he also wants the legitimacy. Nobody questions Shlomo. Like his the legitimacy of his throne.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a metaphor for that too.
Except he's missing one thing from Shlomo. What's he missing? Well, two things. well, basically everything. The wisdom, right? You know, the legitimacy.
Well, he wants the legitimacy.
The connection to what? Connection to God, right? Parentage. He's basically missing everything, right? So, what? How does? How do? So therefore, what's he looking for? Right. Thank you. That's exactly right. What does he do? Pasuk Dalet. And this, I think, is so shy. It's like so bolate this year. V'har oto et osher kvod malchuto. V'et yikar teferet dulato. And he sat on this throne in order to do what? To show the wealth of kvod malchuto. Right? Of the honor of his monarchy. V'et yikar, and the specialness of teferet dulato, is greatness. Yabim rabim shmonim ma'at yom. 180 days. Who has a 180-day party? Like, even like I've told you in years past that it's a military campaign or whatever. Who makes a party for 180 days? Okay, what's the purpose of the party? And there's no other way to say it. It's going to be the best party for the most people for the longest amount of time. Like, that's what it is, right? How do you fake it? You show, like, how do you convince people that you are the most powerful person? If you show people the most powerful person, when has anybody ever seen anything like that? People are going to be talking about that party for the rest of their lives. You know what? Probably were. Now, how were they talking about the party? Hard to know. You know, would you say, this is crazy, it was the craziest party I've ever been to, or the best party? It all depends on your perspective. Ubimlo'ot hayamim ha'ele, when those days, 180 days were over, עשה המלך לכל העם הנמצאים בשושן הבירה מגדול ועד קטן משתי שבעת ימים. He made an even better party for all the people living in Shushan, okay, a party of 7 days, בחצר גינת ביטן המלך, in the chatzar, in the courtyard of the גינת ביטן. What's גינת ביטן? I don't know, it's some kind of garden. Botanical garden? ביטן?
Garden of the King's Palace.
Garden of the King's Palace. Okay, he invited everybody in and made this lavish party. Now, these words are so fascinating. Chur, karpas, utchelet, achuz bechablei butz ve'agaman, aglilei kesef ve'amudei shesh. Translate, please. Chur, we don't know.
There are hangings of white fine cotton and blue wool, held with cords of fine linen and purple wool, upon silver rods and marble poles.
Marble poles. Okay, mitod zahav v'kesef, beds of gold and silver, al bitzpat bahash v'shesh v'dar v'socharet, on floors of
green and white and shells of onyx marble.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a question for you. Didn't you ever ask yourself the following question? Who the hell cares?
Well, he's showing.
What?
We do.
Oh yeah. Ooh, what they have? Onyx. I never thought about that. Let's do that. Would you ever decorate?
No, like that, never. But
like that, never. Why not? Wait, why not?
Because it's totally kitchen over.
Oh, it's what?
Kitchen.
Over. It's like, it's not over. It's over, over. It's like, right? You know what I'm saying? When you walk into a place and everything is gold, what does that mean? Look at me.
Exactly.
Look at me. Okay? So this is not here for nothing. These words are written in the Megillah and Tanakh. They're written here in Tanakh, and it's like, to me, it just calls out, you know what I'm saying? That someone, how should we say this, with an inferiority complex, needs to project his opulence and his power and his strength and his wealth.
It's like the Vatican is like.
What?
I've never been to the Vatican, but here it's really. Has anybody been to the Vatican?
It's not. Although. Wait, one second. I don't agree with that necessarily, because then
the
Beit HaMikdash was all gold too.
Yeah.
Right, but the Beit HaMikdash wasn't. It was the house of God. It wasn't the house of a person.
Right.
What's that?
We assume the Beit HaMikdash was tasteful.
Why do you say that? It was gold. The inside. By the way, I would just say this: the outside was not all gold. Inside the Beit HaMikdash itself was leafed with gold. Was painted with gold leaf and covered. But nobody went there. The only people who ever went in there were the Kohanim. Nobody else. Nobody visited. It was the inner chamber of God, right? The Beit HaMikdash itself.
If it's all gold, or it's got onyx and silver and da 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 da.
What?
All everything all at once.
I just want to
make us.
You have to go to Vegas. Correct. Correct.
And that's why also he always listens to like whoever is stronger at the moment. And if Haman is the strong guy, then he's going to go with Haman. If Mordechai is the strong guy, he's going to go with Mordechai. He doesn't. He just wants to be looked upon like as this big thing. But he,
no, I don't think it's just that. I don't think it's just that he wants to be loved. I think he understands that when you go with the strong, with the prevalent idea or the prevalent attitude, that ends, enhances, that adds your power. That's the seed of your power.
Yeah.
Meaning it's, you know what I'm saying? There's always this question of, are you leading or are you following? You know what I'm saying? You lead following, follow leading. And there's a certain theory that says, you know what I'm saying? Give the people what they want. You know, make them feel good about themselves. Show how great I am. And it's sort of like this whole thing mishmash together. Yeah, what did you want
to
say?
I just have to say, I saw a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Faucets are made of gold.
Right. I'm not saying anything about any person specifically.
Right.
If you want to infer on your own. What? You walk into like the tower. You know what I'm saying? There's like all this gold, but it's fake gold. That's what's funny about it. It's like,
no,
you know,
is the plane is real gold.
That makes you feel better? Right? Better.
Just
fine.
Yeah,
what? Vashkot b'klei zahav. People drink. Who drinks in a gold cup? You know, like, if you know anything about gold, it doesn't make for good cups.
Right?
What's that? Neither does silver?
No.
Right. Well, oh, because it tastes bad. Right. But then,
yeah.
Right. Okay. The kelim, kelim shonim. We know the midrash about the kelim, kelim shonim. That's the midrash about the kelim of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay. Is it meaning? It's very. Okay. The Rashi says, actually, interesting. Mishunim ze mizeh. Right, there was a wide variety of different things. It wasn't like, you know, you had all kinds of sets of whatever. It was just different, you know, and everything, one was different than the same. V'yein malchut rav kiyad hamelech. Right, wine, open up the wine cellars. Like, that's also very impressive, very opulent. V'ashtiyak hadat ein ones. Like, what does it mean? Shtiyak hadat ein ones. Very unusual, okay? So, Rashi says, based on the midrash, they wouldn't force people to drink. But the implication is, you could drink as much as you wanted. There was no ein ones, there was no stop. Right? You could just keep going, imbibing, and, you know, people given unlimited, you know what people do when they're given, you know, an all-you-can-eat breakfast bar? Sadly, they load up their plates, you know.
10 times.
What?
10 times.
They don't actually eat all the food. You know, that's very interesting. When you don't pay for it, you don't have to eat everything. But anyway, okay. Ki ken yisad hamelech al kol rav beito la'asot kirtzon ish va'ish. Is that an interesting phrase? Kirtzon ish va'ish. Right? The king wanted to do what everybody wanted. Whatever they wanted. Okay? So this is the introduction to King Achashverosh. Get to know him. This is the person you have to deal with. Now let's tell a story. Okay? Now the story begins, because until now we haven't said anything. Okay? So who do we have? We have a king. We don't know where he came from. But Chazal say that, you know, he could be interpreted one way, Achashverosh. Who Achashverosh? He could be interpreted another way. He could go in one direction and then turn around in another direction. He's the one that caused the stopping of the building of the Beit HaMikdash, but then he's the one that built the Beit HaMikdash. He needed to have the king, the seat of Shlomo, and if he couldn't have the seat of Shlomo, he wanted to have the next best thing. Ki'ilu was the seat of Shlomo. Maybe people thought it was the seat of Shlomo, but you know what I'm saying? I don't know if whatever. And he waited 3 years in order for it to be built. He invited everyone from across the entire world. He had the most countries, invited the most people to the longest party with the most opulent, most beautiful, decorations. Who cares about all these things? The answer is, when you have that, when you have that kind of person who needs the demand and the attention and the opulence and the whatever, right? That's a recipe for one of two things.
Corruption.
What?
Corruption.
Well, he doesn't need to be corrupted. He's rich. Corruption is not the problem here. The problem is, when you need the adulation of the people, what will you do in order to get it?
Anything.
You'll do what you think you need in order to get it. And if they don't like, if that doesn't work, then you'll do something else. Because that's who we're dealing with. And it's that's basically the rest of the story. Right? We tend to forget that Ahasuerus is the guy holding the keys. You know, the whole story surrounds Mordechai and Haman, and Mordechai versus Haman, and what do the Jews do? All those things are true. We always tend to forget, but there's who's the guy in the middle who's being manipulated? But he still is the person with all the power. And it's very important to remember that and to be focused on that. Now we can start telling the story. Now we can try to understand, like, if you think that that's true, right, then the battle between Mordechai and Haman is very, very different. Like, why didn't he bow down to Haman? Bow down, give in to him. Right? Not if you really understand who the king is and who holds the power, who holds the keys. You know, what could happen if you realize this is true, then if you understand that the person who everyone is bowing down to, it's Haman, forget it, bow down to him, why not? Okay? If you understand the danger of a person having the right ear of a man who wants to find favor and will kill his own wife because somebody told him to, maybe we now understand why Mordechai took a stand and said, if we don't do something now, it will be too late. You know what I'm saying? Once you understand that this is the person, and maybe that's why when Mordechai and Esther wrote the book, right? It's so interesting. Who are they writing this book for? They're writing for history, for us to be reading it today. But who had to read it first before they sent it out?
People
of Shushan. Ahasuerus. Remember, they wrote this the year after the story. So how's Ahasuerus going to read this book? Great story. I look great. You're right. That party was amazing. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what he sees. And in the end, oh, thank God, it all came out good. Oh, Ahasuerus was good. Yeah, it started out not so good, but it was good in the end. It was really good in the end. Whereas we're supposed to read it with a different eye, with a different understanding, and trying to be much more aware of the dangers that might arise when someone rises to power with such a need for acceptance and a need for legitimacy, and someone so focused on the external that, you know. I have one more thing I was thinking about. What happens when they say, can you change your mind? What happens when they say, you made a mistake. Okay, you made a decree against the Jews. Take it back. What does he say?
He says he can't.
Why?
I don't know.
Right. Why not? So I always thought that it was a rule of, like, you know, the kingdom. Who makes the rules?
Yeah.
Him. So what rule did he make? He made a rule that said, I'm never wrong. Mm-hmm. That was the rule. Why? Because you can never be wrong. So how do you change? So then they had to understand the psychology and say, you know, you're right, you're never wrong. But you didn't understand when you said A, when you didn't understand, I forgot to tell you A plus B. A is of course correct, but B is also correct. And you know what he says then? Oh, that sounds good. You know, as long as we can get by without saying that I'm wrong, do whatever you want. But if you're going to say I'm wrong, I can't save the Jews. They're going to have to die. Because I'd rather kill all the Jews in the world than admit that I was wrong. That's who we're dealing with. No political influences whatsoever, as long as that's clear. All right, have a good day, everybody.